Here's something to think about that has to do with alcohol. What a great way to start the show, right? I was with some friends last night. I don't know why, but I was. And alcohol was being consumed. Not the rubbing alcohol, but the drinking kind. And I'm very careful with my intake. As soon as I feel like I'm, you know, getting a little tipsy, I stop. But one of my friends doesn't stop. He kind of just, you know, has a good time. He lets it all loose, man. I don't let it all loose. He lets it all loose. So he's drinking. He's getting a little, as we say, tipsy. And his voice is getting a little bit slurred and going, and he puts his hand on my leg. Now, when a guy on purpose puts his hand on my leg, no matter how many drinks I may have had, I feel a tad awkward. Maybe that's just me. Be it right or wrong, I feel awkward. So he's putting his hand on my leg, and he says to me, and he looks at me, and his breath is stinking, you know. And he's looking at me, and he's saying, "You know, Ron, I love you. You're such a cool, you're so cool, man. You're such a good person to me. You're so nice. I really like you." And and I said, "Yeah, I like you too. You know, I like you too." Just to shut him up. Awkward, an odd display of affection. just an odd display. So anyway, I was thinking about that. And he's fine, by the way. He got home just fine. I was thinking about that, and I was saying to myself, you know, what is being inebriated? When someone says something to you when they're apparently drunk, which means they're in an altered state of mind, and they say something really nice to you that's very revealingly nice, like, you know, you're a great person, man. There's nobody better than you. Are they... Is the alcohol breaking down all the barriers? Is this a way that they really, really feel for real? But when they're normal, they don't have the courage to say that? Or does the alcohol fictitiously put them in a place that they're really not at? In other words, when he says to me, "Ron, yeah, you're a really, really great guy. You're really, really great guy." Is that the honest feeling, or is that a false feeling that he's expressing? It's the same for a woman. She gets a little bit tipsy, and she starts getting very amorous. You know, she starts stroking your back and then your other things, and which I'm not complaining about, believe me. But is that their true feelings? Because they don't do that all the time unless they had a few drinks. Is that their true feelings? Are they really that emotionally, sexually want to attack you? Or is it the alcohol that puts them in a state that they would never, ever be in? Usually when somebody makes a sexual advance to somebody else because they've had too much alcohol, and they're all over you, so to speak, the next day they apologize. You know, last night when I was, when we had sex, it was only because I had a little bit too much to drink, and I think I got a little too out of control, and I apologize. And the guy says, I thought that was really the way you felt. Is that the way they really felt? Is it the way that they didn't really feel? I don't know the answer to that. I pose it to you because I'm sure you've been in circumstances where people who are inebriated said weird things to you. And you wonder, is that real or is that false? Is that because they're drunk, or did the drinking let down their barriers and that's the way they really feel inside, but were too shy to say it before? Which is it, man? Which is it? I don't know. You see, I don't get drunk enough ever to do things like that. Now, when I have a few drinks, I do get very, how can I put it? you do get into a loving mode where everything is really okay and that's not so bad. And, you know, that's he's really a good person. She's really a good person, even though I don't treat them well. I feel like I want to call them and say something nice. But even for me, I'm saying to myself, is that the way I really feel about them? Or is that because I had a few drinks? And I don't know the answer to that. Even for myself, I don't know the answer to it. Am I boring you? Yeah? I thought so.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
I just thought that was a fascinating social question.
Whatever.
Good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you, Julie. Welcome to the program. Hi. Welcome to Allergy Central. Oh my gosh, I've got allergies. What happened to me? Who gave this to me? Are allergies catching? If someone has allergies who's standing near you and they sneeze with their allergy sneezes and they have their watery eyes, can you catch that for the rest of your life? Is it like shingles? I watch television commercials. They say that if you had measles or whatever it is, then you're a good candidate for having shingles when you get older. I don't understand what shingles were. I thought like all of a sudden you started developing roofing tiles all over your body. But apparently shingles are these red things. They're like, they burn and they blister and, ick. Do you catch those too? What if you have sex with someone who has shingles? Can you pass shingles amongst you? And allergies too? I don't want to touch anybody anymore. I don't want anybody near me at all anymore. You're giving me all this stuff, and I know it's probably not contagious, but why would I take a chance with you? People are contagious simply by their personalities. We had this expert on the show, Patty Wood, last week. What a wonderful woman she is, by the way. And she was talking about body language and all that kind of, it's like sign language, only it's with your body. I don't know what it is. But it's about body language, and that's catching. That's nice. That's good. I've been practicing all weekend my body language because I don't think my body language is good. I think when it comes to body language, I'm deaf. I don't have good body language. I pretty much just stand there, and my body gives off no language whatsoever. You can tell. When I'm talking to people, they're looking at me like, are you, what kind of body language is this, Ron? You have no body language. I don't see yelling coming out of your nose. I don't see any type of emotion in your knees. I'm seeing no language at all coming out of you. And Patty Wood, this body language expert, says that, no, your body has to speak along with you. That is your total involvement. Your body, when someone's talking, you have to stare at them like they're godlike or there's something wrong with them. You have to have eye contact. I don't want to contact your eyes. I want to get conjunctivitis. It's bad enough I already got your shingles and your allergies. Now I got to contact your eyes. So I've been practicing. When people talk, I've been like just staring them down. I think it's freaking them out. Why are you staring at me? Why are you staring at me? And apparently, from what I've learned, you're not supposed to stare at their breasts for some reason. I don't know. I don't get it. But I guess you're not supposed to. I didn't read that anywhere. I'm kidding. I don't do that. So I'm practicing my body language. And when I talk, I've been moving my body more. I want to be more like an Italian. Now, I'm not being racist toward or against Italians, but they've got this body language really down, man. When they talk, their whole body moves. They are flailing their arms and eating pizza, and they're just going nuts, you know, and they take their fingers and their hand, and they accentuate words with them. They move their arms around when they're talking. They're just like so animated. They're like freaking cartoons, these people. But they are engaging. They are. So I want to be more Italian with my body language. Except for the body hair. I don't want the body hair that a lot of Italian men have. They seem to be quite hairy. Italian men and Jewish men have a lot of hair. Not on their heads, though. Isn't that odd? Not on their heads, necessarily. But all over the rest of their body. It's God's little joke on these men. You know, oh, you think you're so virile. You think you're so strong and so macho. I'm going to take the hair away from your head, and I'm going to start putting it on places in your body that shouldn't have hair at all. How about your back? I'm going to turn your back it's going to look like a lawn that hasn't been mowed in 5 years. I'm going to grow weeds on your back. I'm going to make you look really odd. I'm going to make you look like a gorilla. That's what I'm going to make you do, you macho person, you. You and your entire, all your friends, anyway. How you doing? Good to be with you today. Well, you're looking great today, though. There's something about you. I think it's, you smell. Anyway. Hey, guess what? Coming up later in the show, Mary Lou Henner is going to join us today. Mary Lou Henner, you may recognize her. Well, this is radio. You're not going to recognize anybody, actually. Mary Lou Henner was on the television show Taxi. Do you remember that show with Judd Hirsch and Andy Kaufman and Danny DeVito and Mary Lou Henner and some other people? I can't remember their names. Jeffrey something. I don't really know. A very funny show, very popular show. She joins us today. Mary Lou Henner, she's a wonderful woman. She's just wonderful. Hey, congratulations to Anderson Cooper. I don't watch a lot of 24-hour news stations unless there's something happening like these days. You know, Trump does something every day. It's a great adventure, a suspense novel. A little scary because it's real life. But if we're fictional, I'd read the whole series because it's fascinating. So on CNN, whenever there's breaking news, which is every 2 seconds, Anderson Cooper has this panel of analysts. They do this on all the 24-hour news stations. Fox does it, MSNBC. They bring in this panel of experts because we don't know what the hell we're talking about. You see, when there's something that happens in the news, apparently human beings can't figure out what's going on. So they bring in analysts to tell us the way that we should feel. I don't have to do anything anymore. With the internet I don't even have to get up. I don't even have to bat an eyelash. That's my body language, batting an eyelash. I don't have to do that anymore. Now I don't even have to think. The 24-hour news stations will sort it out and tell me exactly the way I should react to things. It's so simple. So simple. I don't even know why I have a brain. I don't have to use it anymore. So on CNN, they're talking about Trump. Oh, whoa, there's some breaking news, huh? How often does that happen? Trump, of course, fires the FBI chief, James Comey, and then has the Russian diplomats in his Oval Office so they can fingerprint, and Russian diplomats can put little electronic bugs, you know, in the wall, and you know, so that they can hear everything that's going on in the Oval Office. So it's a wonderful idea to have them in. And he says to them, yeah, I just fired FBI, the director, James Comey, because, and guess what? Don't worry. He's not going to, there's going to be no more investigations. I'm going to fire him, and he's fired, and that's going to be the end of the Russian investigation. And by the way, that Comey, he's a nut job. He's a nut job. So they're talking about this on CNN. By the way, Trump calling somebody else a nut job. You got to stop and think for a second. How does he get away with that? It's not that he's calling somebody else a nut job. It's that he's a nut job calling another person a nut job. It's like nut job land. Forget Disney World. It's nut job world. So Anderson Cooper is talking about it. And one of the panelists there, one of the analysts is this guy, Jeffrey Lord. Jeffrey Lord always defends Donald Trump. He's a Trumper. He's a Trumper. He's always defending him. Donald Trump can do no wrong. So I guess Anderson Cooper gets a little bit frustrated with this all the time. And he says to he says to this guy, Jeffrey Lord, who's defending Trump, saying, oh, you called him a nut job. That's okay. Don't worry about it. So Anderson Cooper says to Jeffrey Lord, you know, if Trump took a dump on his desk, you would probably defend it. Which is a wonderful line. I think that's really funny and ballsy, Anderson. Of course, it's a news station. You're not supposed to say stuff like that on a news station, but what the hell? I mean, everybody else does. Anderson Cooper goes on in that particular statement to say, I mean that you support everything Trump does, so you're very loyal to him, and I guess loyalty is a good thing. So he's even explaining it as he says the insult to Jeffrey Lord. Love that insult, though. If Trump took a dump on his desk, he would probably defend it. I love that. The picture of it is just so beautiful. It's beautiful, man. Anderson Cooper, apparently, because he's a nice guy, he hears from other people. You know, you shouldn't have said that. You shouldn't have said that. That's like insulting. It's not nice to say about someone taking a dump on their desk and then other people defending it. It just is not right. So Anderson gets on Twitter, and he tweets that he's sorry. He says, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said it, and I apologize for that. You know, I don't think you had to do that, Anderson, but it was so refreshing to hear somebody apologize for something. I haven't heard an apology in years now. That was refreshing. You didn't have to do it, but it was very, very refreshing. Thank you, Anderson. For a gay man, you have a lot of balls. And that has nothing to do with it. Gay men can have balls. It's fine. I don't even know why I said that, to be honest with you. Hey, I apologize for what I just said. Huh? Hey, I apologize for that. Oh, man. The world is just crazy. Hey, thanks for tuning in to the Ron Van Dam Circus. Pleasure. We're here every single weekday. Yeah, we do a new show every weekday. We've been doing it for almost 30 years. Ron, get a life, will ya? Apparently, I won't. Apparently, I won't do that. You can hear us on whatever you're listening to us on now. We're also on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, NewEnglandBroadcasting.com, RonVanDam.com, various podcast networks, including the Podbean Network. As a matter of fact, we are now also on the Alexa thing, you know? That's the little thing that you talk into and it talks back, the Alexa Amazon thing. You can listen to our podcast through your Amazon device now, through the Podbean network. So there's all different ways of doing it. Thank you so much for your patronage. It'll be a free parting gift when the show is over. All right, here's something that just really annoys me, and I assume it'll annoy you too. I assume it will. This is about health care. As you know, this Trump guy wants to kill the quote-unquote Obamacare and turn it into Trump care. Apparently, that's not working out so far, so I don't know. Congressman Ron Blum, I've never heard of him. His last name is spelled B-L-U-M. He holds a town meeting in his Dubuque Town Hall. Dubuque is in Iowa, I believe. So he's holding this meeting, and the residents from Dubuque are showing up last Monday night. And he's talking about health care, and he's saying this Obamacare thing sucks, he says to the people there. He says it sucks. He says, why should a 62-year-old man have to pay for maternity care? Because in Obamacare, we all pay for everybody, you know what I'm saying? We all have our health care premiums. And one of the premiums that we're paying for coverage-wise is maternity care. And this congressman is saying, well, men can't have babies. Maybe men should be paying less for health care than women because we're never going to use maternity care. What are you, sick? How did you get voted into office saying things like that? However, the congressman really believes that. And again, he says, quote, why should a 62-year-old man have to pay for maternity care? I ask, why should I pay for a bridge that I don't cross? This is the mentality of politics. This might divide you as to what side you're on. So, so the congressman says, why should I, a 62-year-old man, pay for maternity care? Why should my premiums be lower? I'm not going to be pregnant. Why am I paying for that? Someone in the audience stands up, and instead of having a question, she says this. Why should I pay for a bridge that I don't cross then, or a sidewalk that I don't walk on, or a library book I don't read? Why should I pay for a flower I won't smell, or a park I won't visit, or art I can't appreciate? Why should I pay the salaries of politicians I didn't vote for, a tax cut that doesn't affect me, or a loophole I can't take advantage of? It's called democracy, a civil society, the greater good. That's what we pay for. Ooh, in your face, Congressman Rod Blum, in your face. Thank goodness there are still some intelligent people left in the world. Not many, but there are some.
Have you ever wondered how Ron Van Dam manages to sound so damn sexy podcast after podcast after podcast? It's simple. No pants. Ever. Pants are for suckers. You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. Pants-free podcasting at its finest.
We're saying hello to Dr. Arjun Balar, and Mary Lou Henner joins us as well. How are you both today?
Well, great. We're talking to you, so we're really happy.
That's the
great. Good morning.
That is the proper response. Thank you very much. Okay. We're all familiar with actress Mary Lou Henner, and the doctor joins us as well. But I'm curious, Mary Lou, why you're involved in talking about this subject of bladder cancer.
Well, 14 years ago, I reconnected with someone that I knew in college. He had been my roommate's boyfriend, but I was like, you know, didn't dare twinkle in his direction. Always had a crush. We reconnected within a week. We're saying, I love you. We're going to spend the rest of our lives together. And 2 weeks later, on this romantic vacation together, and, you know, he's in the bathroom doing whatever, and I go in the bathroom, and all of a sudden I notice there's this little telltale blood in the bathroom. And I said, "Michael, are you okay?" And he said, "Oh, yeah. No, I'm fine. I've had blood in my urine for 2 years, on and off. So no big deal. My doctor said it's a reaction to, you know, it's a gallstone or a kidney stone working its way through, or stress or whatever." And I said, "Excuse me, I don't think blood in your urine for 2 years is not a big deal." So I said, "I want you to go and see my doctors." He said, no, it's okay, it's fine. So anyway, he goes and sees his doctor within a month, and the guy says, "All right, yes, you have bladder cancer. Come back in 5 months.
Oh, my.
So I said to him, "You're going to see my doctors now." And, of course, they found the worst kind of bladder cancer that his first doctor had missed. So we wrote a book about it last year. It was a New York Times bestselling book called Changing Normal, How I Helped My Husband Beat Cancer. And Genentech knew about it, and they approached me about talking to the caregivers out there, having those difficult conversations. I loved the opportunity to share my story with my husband, with the rest of the world, and teach the caregivers how to ask those tough questions. So there's this incredible website, becan.org, where you can find a discussion guide about opening up that dialogue. And that's why I'm here.
All right. So, doctor, let me turn it to you for a second. It's abnormal to find blood in your urine at any point. Do you immediately go to a doctor?
So bleeding in the urine is abnormal, and certainly it needs to be evaluated by a physician. Mm-hmm. There are definitely benign causes, such as it doesn't have to be bladder cancer, and anybody who has bleeding in the urine, the first thought should not actually be bladder cancer.
Uh-huh.
Certainly kidney stones, urinary tract infections, that can certainly be a cause, but it has to be evaluated by a doctor.
Okay.
Yeah. And what's incredible is that 62% of all people, if they found blood in their urine or if they felt pain or whatever, they'd be too embarrassed to talk to their partner about it. I mean, and that's like two-thirds of the people out there. And that was a crazy statistic to me. So was excited about, you know, sharing that information as well.
That sounds like a response in the 1950s.
I know.
You know, not something this day and age where we're so medically in tune and concerned.
Sure.
But Marilou, in your husband's situation, he actually went to a doctor, and it was misdiagnosed or not diagnosed?
It was misdiagnosed, and, you know, even though he had a cystoscopy, I mean, I think the guy just missed it. I mean, even the guy that he went back to see, which was a second doctor, he missed the carcinoma in situ. He said he only had the papillary kind, which is like a skin tag and you lop it off, which I guess is 80% of most people have that kind of cancer. But he actually ended up in the 20%. He actually had both types of cancer, bladder cancer. So it was really, it was a journey for the two of us, our first year of our relationship. Yeah.
So doctor, what do you do about something like that? If you do go to a doctor, I guess if it's something, how do you know if it's serious? And if it is, obviously second opinion would be in order, but how do you deal with something like that where a diagnosis is not proper?
Yeah, so I think, you know, this goes back to our central message that I tell all of my patients is that it's never wrong to get a second opinion. Any physician who feels threatened by a second opinion is not a physician that you'd want to keep.
Yeah.
And personally, from my perspective, being a bladder cancer expert, I understand that, you know, this is not exactly a cancer that most physicians treat on a regular basis.
Right.
So, in fact, when you see a urologist, which is the first physician that you might see, you might want to see a urologist who has a specialization in cancer.
Yeah.
And often that's where the best care is provided, because not all physicians treat bladder cancer.
I guess, but then common sense kind of takes hold where if you have a situation like that that goes on for months, even after you've seen a doctor, you got a little bit in your brain say, this needs to be looked at again.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think most men sort of back off from that.
Yeah.
You know, certainly my husband was, and he was just my boyfriend at that time. I mean, we had only been together 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
He was kind of embarrassed about it a little bit, you know, like, oh, well, it's not a big deal. And he's sort of, you know, a busy man. He just sloughed it off and continued to, like, just deal with it every few months, you know, the blood in the urine.
Eesh.
So I was glad that I mentioned it to him, and that's what I'm trying to inspire in other people. How do you have those difficult conversations with your partner, and how do you become an advocate for them? Because you're going to sit there at their doctor's appointments and you should have an agenda. You should have your questions ready. You should write everything down so you have it for the patient in the doctor's own words, so there's no, you know, error. And, you know, because the patient is going to be sitting there for the most part kind of glazed over listening to one bit of information.
Yeah.
And sort of stuck on that.
Doctor, now, once it is diagnosed, of course, if it's diagnosed early enough, that much the better, but there are treatments and therapies involved, right?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, to what Mary Lou was mentioning, there are, broadly speaking, two types of bladder cancer. There is the muscle invasive and then the non-muscle invasive. And thankfully, Mary Lou's husband had the non-muscle invasive type.
Well,
yeah.
No, he's stage 2, 3. I can show you the...
Oh, yeah. Okay. Report. So, yeah. So, but, you know, what's happening now is that we've seen, at least over the last several years, the last 2 or 3 years, has been a major advancement in terms of how we treat stage 4 bladder cancer, mm-hmm. which is, to this date, been an incurable cancer and associated with a very short survival. We have a new class of treatments called immune therapies that harness the body's immune system, and that these new immune therapies can then target the immune system, and your immune system helps fight your cancer for you.
Right.
These treatments are safe and well-tolerated compared to traditional chemotherapy, and have totally reshaped the way we treat this cancer today.
Fantastic.
Lucky, and just so you know, my husband's 13 and a half years in remission, did not have to go through the surgery or, you know, chemo, radiation, nothing. And so
cool.
He was able to... really cure himself.
Yeah. Well, when you find the right doctors and do the right things can happen.
Yes.
Excellent. Absolutely. Excellent. Where do we go for more information?
You go to bcan.org. There's not only a discussion guide, but there's also a lot of information about the new information about what to do for bladder cancer.
Excellent. Well, doctor, thank you so much for your information. And Mary Lou, thanks for... entertaining us for all these years and bringing us your personal experience into this, so that we can all, you know, when someone has a personal experience that you kind of feel like, you know, because you watch them on television, you actually feel it becomes more substantial than if you just hear somebody talking about it and spouting out numbers.
Thank you so much. Well, yeah. I've always been a girl who's, you know, loves to share information with people.
Yes,
so
yes.
So thank you for appreciating it.
Cool. Hey, thank you to the both of you. Have a wonderful day.
Okay, you
thanks
too.
For having us.
Okay.
Thanks, Ron.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Back to the program. Thank you to Mary Lou Henner over there. Hey, Mary Lou. Thank you so much. Thanks, babe. Oh, ba-da-ba-doo. I've talked about this on the show before. Mary Lou Henner has this memory thing going on where she can remember anything from after the age of 11, which, as I've said on the show before, I find that to be a curse. I have trained myself my entire life to forget things that I don't want to remember. Why would I want to remember horrible things that happen in life? Why would I want to keep those memories near and dear to me? I'd want to forget those. I think the brain is supposed to forget horrible things. It's not that you forget that they ever happened at all, but it's that you don't have these incredible memories of the pain that you went through. You know you went through pain. You know you don't want to go through it again, but you don't recall that pain. If you did, women would never have babies a second time. And perhaps you shouldn't. I'm just saying that. But then healthcare costs really would go down. But, I mean, if women... Very few women love the pain of giving birth. They love giving birth. They love having children. But that pain part was probably not the favorite moment of their lives either. And certainly when you're going through the death of a loved one, that's not something that you want to obsess on every day of your life. It would ruin your mental capacity to live. So I think the brain on purpose tends to forget things over time, or at least the details and the horrible feelings thereof. Marilu Henner has this, I guess, I don't know if it's a disorder or a good order. I don't know what you call a disorder that is good. A good disorder? I don't know what that's called. But she's got this. She's got this total memory recall. She can remember what she had for breakfast on June 5th, 1983. She's just, it's an incredible thing. And I guess that's great, but I guess it's awful. But how does her brain have that capacity? Her head isn't any larger than mine is. In fact, I think my head is larger than hers. But there's less inside. She's got something going on in there, man. And again, I don't know if it's a curse or what. I've talked about this before. I don't want to go over it again. Hey, here's a little tidbit of information for you. I'm very concerned about the security of our personal information. I really am. I don't, I'm not comfortable with this. I'm not comfortable with this information age. Yeah, I can get all the information I want, but so can criminals and scammers. So that doesn't make it like a playing field that I want to play on a field with you. That means everybody's information can be stolen at any time. And apparently countries such as Russia and North Korea, for example, can hack into systems because they're smart people, you know. They're smart people. They don't just walk around. They do stuff. And they can hack into banks and stores and steal information and steal your identity and open up accounts with your Social Security number, which is available everywhere for everybody. I mean, it's just, it's too much, man. It's too much. Too much information has opened us this incredible world of scams and criminal activity. Well, here's one you got to watch out for. You know, do you go to a store? You know, all your credit cards now should have chips in them. Chips and dip. It should have chips in them, which is a security thing. And when you go to pay for something in a store and you use your credit card, if you can't insert it, if the machines there don't take your chip insertion, then they ask you to swipe it. Don't swipe. Swiping your credit card is stealable. The banks won't cover your stolen identity if you swipe. They won't. That's why they put the chips in the credit cards. They'll cover that. If someone steals your credit card information and you're getting false charges on your credit card statement, if you use the chip thing, if it was something that was used as a chip inserting in the machine, the credit card company will back you up. They'll insure you. If you swipe, they won't back you up anymore. They won't insure those purchases anymore. Don't swipe anymore. When you swipe, the store would be responsible, not the bank or the credit card. And they're finding that when your identities are stolen with the swiping of the card, which is really where most of them are stolen from, the stores are supposed to take care of that. But if they don't, you're in trouble. So swiping, man, if you go in a store and they say, we don't have the chip reader, you're going to have to swipe, better to pay in cash. No one's going to cover you when you swipe. That sounds like a joke, doesn't it? But it's not. I wonder if I should go to urgent care because of my allergies. My eyes are itchy and red, and my nose feels like there's someone put cement in it. Anybody ever go to urgent care because their nose was stuffed and their eyes were itchy? I don't think so. Ever walk into an emergency room in a hospital? Oh my God, Mr. Van Damme, what's wrong? Why did you come to the emergency room today? Do you feel faint? No. My nose is just stuffed and I keep blowing it and I've got allergies. Get out of my hospital. What are you doing? Look, see that man in the corner? He's got a gunshot wound to his face. You see that little child over there? Do you see that little child? His limbs are falling off. His limbs are falling off. and you got the nerve to come into the emergency room in this hospital because your nose is a little stuffed, get out of here and never come into this hospital again. You childish little whiny piece of crap. What a great way to end the show. I'll be with you again tomorrow. Until then, I wish you peace.